if you're an optimist, anything's possible, but we don't pursue that which is possible. We pursue that which is probable. Like, think about that for a second. When was the last time that you committed to give everything you had to a goal that you didn't think was likely to happen? The real purpose of a goal isn't actually to hit the goal. We think it is. We think, well, why else would you set a goal? You set it to hit it, right? But Jim Rohn taught that the real purpose of a goal is to become the type of person who can achieve goals by giving it everything you have, regardless of your results.
We stand today.
This is Method.
The Business with Method. A shout-out.
The Business Method.
The Business Method Podcast.
The Business Method Podcast featuring Chris Reynolds. Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics for location independence.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm your host, Chris Reynolds, and welcome to the Business Method Podcast, a podcast featuring successful entrepreneurs and high-profile people dissecting their business models. We dissect the different methods, tools, and tactics of high-performance online entrepreneurs and high-caliber people in a series format. On our first series, we interviewed 100 entrepreneurs in 100 days that have built businesses creating $100,000 or more annually. On our second series, we interviewed 100 entrepreneurs that have built location-independent businesses that produce over $1 million in annual revenue. And now we're interviewing 100 major influencers to get behind the minds in the science of using influence to grow business and influence income, results, economies, and cultures. There's a growing number of people building these caliber of businesses like this, and we're going to figure out what it takes to make this happen. Now, let's jump in today's show.
The Business Method.
He died at the age of 20 after being hit head-on by a drunk driver and was pronounced dead for exactly 6 minutes. After surviving, the doctors told him he would never walk again and have permanent brain damage. He then recovered and ran a 52-mile marathon. In record time, he became a top sales rep for Cutco Cutlery. Then going into business for himself, he has become a Hall of Fame business achiever, an international keynote speaker, and author of one of the highest rated books in the world, The Miracle Morning, which has been translated into 34 languages and sold over 1 million copies. On top of that, he's a cancer survivor, and his name is Hal Elrod. I came across Hal's work after I heard many of my fellow entrepreneur friends raving about the Miracle Morning. They would start their day using Hal's methods, taking 1 hour each morning to practice silence, affirmation, visualization, exercise, reading, and scribing, each taking 10 minutes. So, as the life hacking nerd that I am, I decided I would try it out also. I did it for 7 months and it was awesome. I'm a firm believer in morning and daily rituals, and I think anyone that implements the Miracle Morning can really make life-changing shifts rapidly. It was really enjoyable talking to Hal. He's such a genuine and inspirational guy. We got some time to dive into how the Miracle Morning came about on the podcast today. We talk about his newest method of life hacking, the Miracle Equation, which is what he used when he was going through cancer. We talk about becoming a top salesman at Cutco and how he used his experience there to apply it to his success. Hal and I dive into some other inspirational topics on the show today, you guys. It's a really good podcast. And without further ado, the man, the miracle man, Hal Elrod.
Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics.
Listeners, I am really excited to welcome the man, the myth, the legend, Hal Elrod to the show today, the author and creator of The Miracle Morning, and something that has absolutely changed my life. Hal, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Chris, I'm doing really well. And as I mentioned to you before we started, I've been struggling through as I've gone through chemo, trying to run the business and run my life and be a dad and be a husband. And so it feels good to authentically say I'm doing really well, because a few months ago it wasn't quite the case.
Yeah, I want to dive into like your story, Hal. You have such an amazing story, but what is most impressive is that you can keep a positive mental attitude through all the challenges that you have. And, you know, you've actually, you had two near-death experiences that I know about anyway, but one, you actually died when you were lifeless for 6 minutes.
And the doctors told you that you're never going to walk again, but you went ahead and you started walking really soon and even ran a 52-mile marathon. And also, I know you're going through cancer these days and staying positive, and it's disappearing, and then, you know, going through challenges with that as well. But first, I want to say, like, as the creator of the Miracle Morning, you've been such an inspiration. I've used the Miracle Morning for 7 months straight, and it has changed so many people's lives. Do you still use that on a regular basis? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I've done the Miracle Morning almost every single day for, you know, probably an average of 6 days a week, let's say, for 12 years, I think. 2000
wow.
is when I started. Yeah, so 6 days a week on average for about 12 years.
Where did the idea come from?
It was really, I was at a low point in my life back in 2007 when the U.S. economy crashed. I crashed with it, and I realized that optimism was not, you could not will yourself to, you know, you couldn't will the economy to bend to your will. And so when the U.S. economy crashed, all of a sudden I lost over half of my clients within a 2 month period. I was a coach at the time doing coaching business people, and I lost over half my clients and over half my income, could not pay my mortgage, lost my house back to the bank, and my body fat percentage tripled in like a 6 month period. I wasn't exercising. I got depressed, and I was really at the lowest point in my life financially and mentally and emotionally. And a series of events led me to kind of just Google. Like I consulted Google for help. Like, what do the world's most successful people do every day that I'm not doing? What are their daily rituals and routines? And I kept coming across morning rituals and morning routines, but I, like a lot of people, was like, nah, I'm not a morning person. You know, where's the success plan for people that wake up at like 7 or 8? Like, I don't want to get up at 5 in the morning, you know? And I finally saw so many headlines. All right. I'll start reading a few of these articles and I'll check it out. And what I realized was that the morning ritual, how you start your day, is arguably the single most impactful ritual that you have in your entire life. Because how you start your day, that first ritual, sets the tone, the context, and the direction for the rest of your day and thus the rest of your life. But it all begins in the morning. And so I went on this quest of I'm gonna discover what would be the most extraordinary, powerful, effective morning routine in the history of the world. You know, I mean, I was aiming high, and I created this thing. It wasn't called the Miracle Morning. It wasn't a book idea. It was 6 practices organized in an acronym, SAVERS, S-A-V-E-R-S. And the first S is for silence. The A is for affirmations. The V is for visualization. The E is for exercise. The R is for reading. And I was looking at those 6 practices and I go, which one of these is going to be the best? That's my morning ritual. Like, which one is the most effective? And as I kept scouring the internet, trying to figure out which was the best, none are the best, right? It depends on who you ask. But any one of them is life-changing, right? If you meditate every day, you start that practice, it'll change your life, right? If you start reading books every day, of course. None of these are new. And I almost threw in the towel because I'm like, none of these are new. Like, I'm looking for something revolutionary. And what became revolutionary was the epiphany. I went, wait a minute. What if I did all of these? What if I woke up tomorrow and I did the 6 most timeless, proven personal development practices in the history of the humanity that the world's most successful and fulfilled and accomplished people have sworn by for centuries? That would be the ultimate morning ritual. And within 2 months of doing this morning routine, I went from being in the worst shape of my life physically to committing to run a 52-mile ultra marathon, as you mentioned earlier. And my depression was gone within a matter of days. And I went to my wife and I said, sweetheart, this morning routine has changed my life, our lives, so fast. It feels like a miracle. And she goes, it's your miracle morning. And I go, Yeah. And then I started teaching it to the coaching clients that I had. And almost every single one of them said, I'm not a morning person. And a week or two later, after I, you know, taught this to them and how to do it and how to beat the snooze button, they came back and they go, oh my gosh, this is changing my life. And that's when the light bulb went off. And I went, well, wait a minute, if it's changing my life and I wasn't a morning person, the Miracle Morning is changing all of my clients' lives. None of them were morning people. This could change anyone's. It could change the world. It could change anyone's life. And I got to work, and you know, 3 years later, wrote the book and sold over 2 million copies. It's practiced by over 1 million people in over 100 countries, and I'm just continuing to share the message as much as I can because of how life changing it is for people.
I've got to ask, Hal, do you ever get tired of doing the Miracle Morning?
No, in fact, the opposite. And I think, and this is really common, and you can maybe share your own experience on this, but most people in the Miracle Morning community is a global community, but it's also a Facebook group by the same name, right? There's a Facebook group on with 235,000 people, I think, that are, you know, wake up every day and do their Miracle Morning and support each other. And a question that gets asked in the Miracle Morning community Facebook group a lot is, how many days a week, you know, do you do the Miracle Morning? Do you take the weekends off? Responses, and most people say, when I started, I did it Monday through Friday and I took the weekends off. But I felt so inspired and empowered and focused Monday through Friday. And then Saturday, I woke up a couple hours later and just was like, what, you know, I have no direction. I didn't start with, you know, right? And that was true for me too. It's like, you find that when you do the Miracle Morning, you feel so much better. You think so much clearer. You have so much more energy and motivation. And then when you don't do it, you miss out on all those benefits. And so it usually goes from 5 days a week to 6 days a week. And then, you know, very often to 7 days a week.
Yeah, absolutely. I find that, like, I'm one of the assets for me, I think, is to practice different morning rituals. Like, I did the Miracle Morning for 7 months, felt amazing, you know, highly recommend it for anybody. But then I was like, I want to try another one.
Yep.
And I tried another one and still feel good. So my, you know, maybe it's an hour of meditation or maybe it's an hour of exercise first thing when I wake up. But I've got to have one of those six, I think, at least in my morning routine to keep things going.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And that's one thing people ask often, you know, well, what if I get bored of one of the practices? I go, well, whose responsibility is it to make it fun again, right? Like, and that's the beauty of every single one of the Sabers, the six practices that make up the Miracle Morning, is that they're all kind of, you know, a minute to learn, a lifetime to master type things, right? Where, you know, meditation, you can learn how to close your eyes and sit quiet. Yeah, you know, I mean, you just learned how, right? In 5 seconds. But to really master meditation, if you will, I mean, I've heard, you know, people will say, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, right? Like, you know, so, you know, visualization, there are infinite practices that you can create for visualization, and same thing with affirmations. And for me, my affirmations, they're always being edited and evolved, if you will, as I'm learning and growing and evolving.
Let's move to another subject now, Hal. I'm curious about your growth as a salesman, as an entrepreneur over, you know, since you've started. I think you started when you were 19, and becoming an influencer. And I know you went from, you know, cutlery salesman to, you know, then creating the Miracle Morning. And I don't know if this is the correct order exactly, but then becoming an international speaker. Now you have live events. Now you even have a movie that has been out. You're releasing another book. And this process, growing as an influencer, can you just give us an outline of how it happened for you? And then kind of some of the maybe key takeaways that you learned about the importance of being a responsible influencer.
You know, your motivation, your purpose for why you're doing what you're doing. And I think that in order for, you know, this is just my experience, of course, I'm not claiming that I've got it all figured out, but for me, it's coming from a place of authentic service, a desire to serve others and the contribution that you can make to their lives. When I was 25 or 26, I read a book called Love is the Killer App by Tim Sanders. And he talked a lot about purpose and creating a purpose. And for me, the first purpose that I ever wrote down was to selflessly add value to the lives of other people. Like, that was my purpose. And for me, you know, people often, I think, get really caught up on, well, what's my purpose in life? And they're looking for something specific. Ideally, for me, a purpose is, it's more general and applicable to any interaction, any situation, any given day, any adventure, any, you know, relationship. So the idea that to selflessly add value to the lives of others, that's a purpose that I still apply to the, you know, I mean, what, it's been 15 years since I came up with that. and begin living into it. And it is, you know, I now look at how can I do that? How can I selflessly add value for my wife? And how can I selflessly add value for my kids? And how can I selflessly add value for my clients or attendees of our event or members of my community or my readers, right? And all of those. And so the idea is that having a purpose that is really about serving others. And then what happened is I started to notice as I was living into that purpose that people would call me that I didn't want to talk to. So I didn't answer the phone. All right. So I realized, wait a minute, I'm adding value only on my terms. So I'm selfishly adding value to the lives of other people, only if it benefits me, only if I feel like it, right? And I didn't like that. That didn't resonate as authentically how I wanted to live. And so I wrote that word selflessly add value, which meant for me, my purpose was genuinely about what the other person, whoever that other person was at any given moment, what they needed, what they wanted, what was best for them, even if it wasn't necessarily best for me, even if I didn't feel like it or I didn't have the energy to step up and add value in that moment. And I remember I got a call from a friend of mine who had kind of gone off the deep end, if you will. Like he had had a nervous breakdown and he was in an institution and diagnosed with bipolar. And every time he called and I talked, it just drained me. And so I hadn't been answering his calls. And I wasn't being a great friend. I was making it about me, but I was like, I don't have the energy to talk to him. You know, it just really brings me down. And then he calls me. It was the morning that I had written that statement, selflessly adding value. And I look at the phone and I bought what I had done the last, you know, handful of times he called me. I set the phone back down. And then the voice in my head, which was my own voice, it was like, Hal, you're committed to selflessly adding value to the lives of other people. He's calling because he wants value in some way from you, right? So I picked up the phone and we had a really great conversation. I offered him some encouragement. And a few years later, he approached me during the event and he said, Hal, you have no idea how much I need this. And he said, I have to tell you something. He goes, I'm sure you don't remember this. And by the way, that conversation that I had solidified my purpose, right? Because I went, wow, right. By me being selfless, he felt great and I felt great, right? So years later, he comes to the event and he says, I'm sure you don't remember this, but I called you one day, a few years ago. He said, and I was, I never told you this, but I was suicidal. And he said, you were kind of my last ditch effort.
Wow.
Yeah, right? And I'm just getting the chills as he's telling me this face to face at the event. And he said, you answered the phone and you told me some things, you encouraged me. And I got off the phone and said, I'm not going to kill myself. And
wow.
Right. Yeah. And I said, Alex, you know, and I literally started crying. That call has never left my mind. Like that call was pivotal for you. Apparently I didn't realize, but for me too. And I shared my side of kind of how that solidified my purpose in life. And anyway, so that's that for me. If you want to be a true influencer, that's where you start. And it goes back to the old Zig Ziglar quote, you can have everything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want. And so whether your selflessness comes from a place of altruism, which doesn't have to, or it comes from a place of selfishness, right? Which is, I say, like, you can be selfishly selfless by going, well, hey, there's a lot of things I want in my own life. I want to be happy and healthy and successful or wealthy, whatever. And then just know that if you take on this air, this or not an air, but a true purpose of selflessly adding value for others, you will become a person of value to others and they will pay you for that value. Whatever it takes for you to get to that place of selflessness, it's the best way I find to be an influencer.
I think that's absolutely, that's an amazing story. But here's where I'm always challenged with it. And it seems like you've had those challenges before, like you made that your full commitment and your full, you know, path in life. But, you know, there's a saying like, negative people will suck your energy away. And also, like, where do you cut that off? Like, I get 50 Facebook messages a day, like, and I can't, you know, I can answer all of them, but then it takes away from other areas of my life. So how are you balancing that so it doesn't take away with time with your kids and family and your own, you know, physical health and all of it?
Yeah, that is a great question. And really great question. And it's something that I don't know that there's a black and white answer. Number one is really getting clear on what it is in your life that, in terms of the people in your life, the type of people and the type of energy that you want to surround yourself with. And when I say it's not black and white, it's because it's not an all or nothing thing. I mean, it can be, but my perspective, for example, here's a way that might look. So let's say you have a friend that is an energy drain, right? So it's about protecting your time and limiting the amount of time that you expose yourself to what might drain your energy and have a negative effect on your psyche, your emotional well-being, your energy. So for me, that's the answer, is that it's simply amount of, you know, allocating how much time and energy you're going to invest on adding value for others. And this is really important. In fact, this is probably a more important part of this answer, is to make sure that you are, that self-care is your number one priority. And I think this is, you know, no one knows why I got cancer, in terms of my cancer is very rare and aggressive. And by the way, I am in remission, for everybody, just so you know, I am cancer free. I'm still on maintenance chemo and going through the journey. But for the most part,
congrats.
Thank you. It was a very scary time a few years ago. I was given a 10 to 30% chance of surviving.
Oh, wow.
So the point is, if you are nurturing your mind, body, and spirit every single day, which is part of the Miracle Morning, I mean, that's what it is. You're every day, you're starting the day by nurturing your mind, your body, your spirit, your psyche, all of it. And if you're doing that every day, if you're feeding yourself great energy, you know, life-giving food, if you're exercising every day, if you're meditating every day, if you're thinking good thoughts, you know, I spend time in bed every morning and every night. The first thing I do when I wake up and before I go to bed is I just sit there and I just lay there and I just think and feel amazing thoughts of love and gratitude. And for me, because of the cancer, you know, healing, I'm always just thinking healing and feeling healing thoughts. But the point is, if you nurture yourself, you have a lot more to give. If you're burnt out, if you're exhausted, then that person who's in a tough time themselves and needs your, you know, your energy, you can't give what you don't have. And so I think that's a big part of it, is when you have an abundance of love and health and energy and all the things that people in your life would need from you, then you have a high capacity to serve others.
That's amazing. Hal, I know you're, you know, going through this challenging time of your cancer's in remission, which is so cool. I want to talk to you more about that, but like the new book, The Miracle Equation, came from this experience with cancer, and you had a near-death experience when you were 20 years old, died for 6 minutes. And then you're telling the story about your friend who was suicidal, and then you hopped on the call and kind of saved his life in some ways. It seems like you're just kind of a miracle or an angel. Like miracles are always around you. And I know you have a really cool definition of miracles. Can you tell the audience what that is real quick?
Yeah. You know, it is interesting that Miracle Morning, I all these, you know, like this brand, I'm not like a brand strategy guy. It's just what authentically came out of, you know, as I mentioned, my wife named it when I told her, hey, it feels like a miracle. And she goes, it's your Miracle Morning, right? But then people have pointed out, like, dude, you died and came back to life multiple times. Like you kind of fit the definition. I'm like, yeah. Oh, I never thought of that, right? So here's how I define a miracle. And I think it is important, because miracle is a very loaded word. And I think that it's not a very, for a lot of people, it's not a very solid word. It's not a very trusted concept. So for me, I really try to make everything as practical and tangible as it can be, especially those things that are woo-woo. I think that's why The Miracle Morning really took off as a book, because I took these woo-woo concepts and made them so results-oriented that people that are even like CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are like, oh, I see now how I can use affirmations to grow my revenue, right? Like, and be a better father or what, you know. So a miracle is any meaningful outcome beyond the realm of what you currently believe is probable for you. Now, there's a couple things to break down there. Number one is, I didn't say possible, right? Because if you're an optimist, anything's possible, but we don't pursue that which is possible. We pursue that which is probable. Like, think about that for a second. When was the last time that you committed to give everything you had to a goal that you didn't think was likely to happen, right?
Right.
We don't do that. We don't go, there's like such a small chance I can achieve this goal, so I'm going to dedicate my life to it. Like most people, what? No, we don't do that. We go, I'm going to work on improving by 10% because there's probability in that.
Right.
Right. But people that create these miracles, I call them tangible, measurable miracles, right? These results that are so outside the realm of what you believe is probable that when you achieve it, it feels like a miracle. Right? Yeah. And so for me, that is what this is about. How do you create extraordinary results in your life? And I'm talking every single area of your life. So if we're measuring your how you would measure your success in an area. So it could be your professional success or your in a relationship or how you measure your success as a parent, as a friend, as a spouse, your level of health. If we're measuring it on a scale of 1 to 10, I think it's safe to say we all want, you know, as close to level 10 as possible in every area of our lives. And that's really what this book is designed to do is, okay, that's, you know, that's great in theory, but how do you actually make it tangible and actionable so that you can get really clear on what does a life of miracles, a life of level 10 success, whatever language you want to use, what is that? And then backwards to actually make it so that your success becomes inevitable. And that's, you know, the subtitle of the new book. It really does simplify, kind of explain what it's about, which is the two decisions that move your biggest goals from possible, which is, you know, as close to non-existent as it needs to be, to probable, which is, okay, now we're getting somewhere, right? Like now I see the probability that this can happen, to inevitable. And the idea is that when you apply two decisions of the miracle equation, which you know, we didn't talk about yet, but your success is inevitable. You really find that it's only a matter of time and that the only variable in you achieving whatever you're setting out to achieve is time. You know, it might take you a year or two or three, but at the point that you finally get to where you've been working so hard for so long, you know, I think we always find the timing is perfect. You know, you look back and go, oh, I had to go through all of these things, these ups, these downs, these setbacks to get to the point where I am today. And the timing, you know, we find it's almost always perfect.
Yeah, I completely agree, even though sometimes it's really hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
To wait until that timing becomes, you know, till we realize that timing's perfect. Hal, tell us about the where the miracle equation came from and in the two decisions that we need to move our lives forward.
The irony is, so if anybody follows my work or my books, The Miracle Morning came out in 2012 and The Miracle Equation came out in 2019, earlier this year. And anybody, I would guess, right, would go, oh, so you're really milking this miracle thing, right? Like you had The Miracle Morning and now The Miracle Equation. The irony is that The Miracle Equation as a concept is what I used to write The Miracle Morning, to publish it, to sell 2 million copies and beyond. You know, it actually, so even though the book came after, The Miracle Equation book came after The Miracle Morning, The Miracle Equation concept and the way of living and these two decisions, which I'll explain here in a sec, it started in 2000. And it started when I was trying to break a sales record. I was in sales. I was 21 years old. And I was trying to do something that in the 50-year history of the company I worked for, no one had ever done this before. And I was trying to wrap my mind around pulling off this huge feat, this sales goal, this number. And then the day before we were about to go out into the field and thought you had 14 days to hit your goals, but the conference was moved up and you only have 10. And, you know, 10 to lose 4 out of the 14 days, it was like it already felt impossible for me to do this thing that had never been done before in 14 days. To do it in 10 was, to me, it was pretty much impossible. And I actually raised my hand when I learned this from our mentor, our manager, and I said, hey, please tell me that this doesn't count for the record I'm trying to break since I don't get the full 14 days. He said, Hal, unfortunately, I'm sorry, it still counts. This, it's kind of now or never. You don't get another chance. And that night I went home and I'm going, there's no way. Like there's no way. And then as I was falling asleep, I remembered one of the most profound lessons I've ever learned. And there's a whole chapter dedicated to this in the Miracle Equation book. The chapter is titled, The Goal is Not the Goal. And he said that the real purpose of a goal isn't actually to hit the goal. We think it is. We think, well, why else would you set a goal? You set it to hit it, right? But Jim Rohn taught that the real purpose of a goal is to become the type of person who can achieve goals by giving it everything. And I'm paraphrasing here, but by giving it everything you have, regardless of your results.
I love that.
Yeah. And you think about it. If you, let's say you try to hit a goal and it's really easy and you hit it, you make a bunch of money or you lose some weight, whatever the goal is, right? It doesn't matter what it is, right? You hit the goal. Wow, I hit it. That was awesome. In fact, the easier it is, the happier you are, but the less you grow, the less you develop, and therefore the less it benefits you in the long run, right? If you get lucky or something, that doesn't really benefit you. But let's say you give it everything you have every day. Let's say you have, whether it's a 14-day period or you're working, you know, for 12 months on your goals this next year and you don't hit the goal. Well, hitting the goal or not pales in comparison to the value of the qualities and the characteristics that you developed throughout that year. You became a better version of yourself, somebody who's more equipped to set bigger and better goals and achieve more than you've achieved before. It's not the achievement that produces the growth. It's the process that produces the growth. So the real secret to success is to define your process, commit to your process, regardless of your results along the way. So for me, I went, okay, what? But going back to the story, I was like, wait a minute, what if I approached the goal where it didn't matter if I hit it or not, but I was committed to give it everything I had until the last possible moment, regardless of my results along the way? And I went, I started to get excited. I got a little bit more fine-tuned in my planning, and I went, okay, I started out mindset-wise. I go, what would prevent me from following through with this intention, this commitment to give it everything I have until the last possible moment? I said, well, the first thing is, if I don't actually believe that it's possible, and this is true for all of us, right? If you think about it, if you're working towards a goal and you're not on track and it's not going like you planned, usually your faith in yourself and the ability that you have to reach the goal goes right out the window. You go, oh man, it's not working out like I thought at all. There's no way. And as soon as the faith goes out the window, that fundamental unwavering faith is the fundamental mindset to great achievement. Doesn't matter whether you're an Olympian, you know, you're trying to win a championship, you're trying to change the world, whatever it is, you've got to maintain unwavering faith thing you have until the end, at least maintaining faith in your ability and your discipline and your will to follow through. The first decision I made is, okay, I will maintain unwavering faith. And I put it in writing. Like I wrote out this mantra that said, I am committed to give it everything I have to sell. And at that time, I was trying to sell $20,000 in those 10 days of kitchen knives. I said to sell $20,000 in 10 days, regardless of my results along the way, no matter what, there's no other option, right? It was this unwavering commitment to give it everything I had. And then the second challenge that holds us back is, once the faith goes out the window, once we lose faith in ourselves, then the effort required follows right behind it because we lose the drive to put forth the effort. So I realized I've got to make two decisions. Number one, I've got to maintain unwavering faith that I can give it everything I have until the last possible moment and that I can put forth extraordinary effort regardless of my results along the way, even if I'm not motivated, I don't feel like it. And of course, we don't have time to go into this, but you know, the book breaks down how do you do that? Like, because those are easy concepts to understand, right? They're deceivingly simple in their explanation, those two decisions, but they're extraordinarily rare in their execution. It's only the very top performers, if you will, in any industry or organization that are able to truly maintain unwavering faith and put forth extraordinary effort consistently over an extended period of time. But when you do that, your success becomes inevitable. It is only a matter of time.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. Just something that came up for me real quick. Have you ever been discouraged, like even though you've applied the miracle equation, knew you were going to get a goal, had put everything you had into it, and then ended up not getting the results that you thought you would get or the goal? Have you ever been discouraged? And if so, about the results and of the goal? And then if so, what did you do about it the next time?
Yes, 100%. In fact, probably more often than not. One of my favorite examples of this is when I wrote The Miracle Morning, I wrote it out of a sense of responsibility. So not The Miracle Equation, but the previous book, The Miracle Morning. When I wrote that book in 2012, I wrote it out of a sense of responsibility because this morning routine, this miracle morning, had changed my life, and I felt I owed it to anyone else who might read the book. It could change their life. But I wasn't thinking big. I wasn't an influencer. I didn't have a platform, right? Or I was a very small influencer within my company. And so I wrote the book, but once it got out there, I started getting emails from people and reading reviews on Amazon that were really profound, where people were talking about how it was transforming their life in profound ways. And I thought, wait, if this is changing a few people's lives, or dozens of people's lives, this could change the world, but I have to think bigger. It's not just a responsibility to get the book done, that was step one. Now I have to figure out how to get it in the hands and in front of millions of people. So I created a goal: change 1 million lives one morning at a time. And that goal, I set a one-year timeline. Just because it was like, I didn't know what else to do. So I thought, oh, I'll try to do it this year. I don't know what that looks like, but I'll try to reach 1 million people this year. And that year, I believe I sold right around 13,000 copies. So I want you to think about that, right, Chris? My goal was 1 million, and I was short of that by 987,000 copies. That's like, what, 98.7% shy of the goal, yeah. Right? So I was 1% of the goal. Now, was I discouraged? Sure. Maybe it'll never happen. I don't know. But again, you have to ask yourself. There's a great quote or a great adage. It says, it takes 10 years to be an overnight success. And which is the idea that most people that you see that show up on the radar, you know, movie stars, whatever, you didn't see the 10 years before when they were sleeping in their car, doing dishes, right? Like, you know, you didn't see that. And so the question is, what do you care enough about and believe enough in to dedicate 10 years of your life to get to the point of overnight success? And I felt that way about the Miracle Morning because it was changing people's lives, not at the grand million person scale that I had envisioned, but you know, in terms of thousands of people's lives. And so I just reset for year two and I go, I'm going to try to reach 1 million people this year. That year I sold like 23,000 copies. So I'm like, all right, I'm still 97% short of the goal, right? So the goal is not to hit the goal. It's who you become in the process of giving it your all. And that's the point, Chris. That first year, I learned a lot about what worked and some things about what didn't work. And I reset and I tried to improve and be better the second year. And I almost doubled the amount of sales I made that first year. The third year, it went to 30 something, right? And it kept increasing. And it took me 6 years until we surpassed 1 million copies sold. But it goes back to what I said earlier, which is that the purpose of a goal is not to hit the goal, it's who you become. That's the first part, right? So every time you don't reach the goal, as long as you learn from it, you are a better version of who you were when you first set out for that goal. And now you can reset, you can reimagine, reinvent yourself and try again. And I think one of the greatest lessons I've learned in life is that, and I said this earlier, but I'll say it again, when we get to the point in your life that you've been working so hard for so long, you almost never wish it would have happened any sooner. Instead, you look back and you see the perfection in the timing of your journey. Yes. And so for me, it's not like when we reached 1 million copies, I'm like, damn it, I can't believe it took me 6 years. This sucks. I'm such a loser. No, I freaking celebrated and I hugged my wife and I'm like, oh my God, it happened. It happened. It took longer than I thought. But it happened. And here's the news. Most of your goals, the big, I mean, juicy miracles that you're after in your life, they will, more often than not, for most of us, they will take longer than in our perfect ideal vision for how quickly they might happen. But when you finally get to that point, you're going to feel amazing. It's everything you will have wanted. And so what are you willing to, what miracle, what goal, what your heart on, and then give it everything you have for as long as it takes. And that is the crux of the miracle equation, is those two decisions, unwavering faith and extraordinary effort. They're not one-time decisions. You've got to make them over and over and over and over and over every single day for as long as it takes. And like I said, I know that's, you know, it's simple in explanation, but to really understand how do you do that? Like that's really what you need to figure out.
Hal, I've been studying goal setting and productivity and high performance for 12 years, and I'm still inspired and enthralled and excited to hear you talk and learning and taking notes while you're talking. It's so awesome. And I love your stuff. I love your inspiration. I wish we had another 3 hours to talk because it would be a really awesome podcast. Again, thank you so much for coming on the show, Hal. We really appreciate it. Listeners, thank you for tuning in once again, and we'll see you on the next episode. Goodbye, everybody. Hey, listeners, thanks for joining us once again. We wanted to remind you about our high-performance productivity coaching and our 5, 6, 7, and 8-figure private masterminds. These are all designed for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs to help you scale rapidly and grow. Check out all the details at thebusinessmethod.com. That's thebusinessmethod.com. And we'll see you all on the next episode.